Do we have a consensus on the order of business?
Yes.
Okay. All right, let's move on then to our first action item, which is the approval of minutes. Do I hear a motion to approve the minutes?
Move approval of the minutes of October 2nd, 2017.
Okay. Second. It's been moved by Mr. Millar and seconded by Mr. Peter. Do we have any discussion? Mrs. Dickinson.
Just real quickly. Item 7, page 5. Dr. Mitakovich did such a great job of reviewing with us how the curriculum process works in our district. And that's mentioned really well here. But it doesn't mention in the minutes the other part of her report about how standards are written at the state level and what that review process is. And she shared with us that she found out that there's no intention really to rewrite them once they're established, although they are reviewed. So I thought that should be noted because that was the second part of the report, which is very interesting. So could you help us with how that might be worded?
Dr. Valentine, then Dr. Mitakovich.
Yeah, I guess I'll defer to Mary on the revision. I didn't hear whether there was support to revise that.
Well, how about some suggested language that we could take back for approval?
Mr. President?
Yes.
What I remember reporting is that the CDE rep in the curriculum department indicated that the standards have been adopted and they are not scheduled to be revised.
Okay. Is that okay? Would Mr. Millar, would you accept that additional language, and Mr. Peter? Okay. Any other discussion? All in favor? It carries 7-0. Let's move on then to presentations and Dr. Valentine.
Well, it's a pleasure tonight to have an opportunity to recognize an individual who's been recognized for some pretty major accomplishments in the past that brought honor to our school district. I think I will defer that honor, though, to Dolores Jackson, who is
teachers that share their gift of teaching with their students. The NFRW My Favorite Teacher Award began in 2001 to acknowledge outstanding teachers across America, encouraging students to dream big. This award recognizes excellence in teaching and the impact that one teacher can have on individuals. The application includes any teacher that has taught 5 years or more. It can be a man or woman. It can be any political person. It can be a person that has to write a resume. They send it in. They talk about their experience, where they teach, some community service and awards they've received. And I think all of you know that Diana has received many, many awards. So I want to say congratulations to her. Diana's journey began for this award in San Luis Obispo, where she was nominated for our club's nominee for the My Favorite Teacher Award in 2007. The next step, she won Central, then she achieved the state award. And finally, she, as a California representative, competed with other people from across the world, to honor and in recognition of the favorite award. She was named a national finalist in September, and we were so excited. But on September 29th, with an audience of nearly 2,000 women from across 50 states, Diana was announced as the national winner. As you can imagine, all 14 of us from San Luis Obispo, we're flying our California flags and leading the audience in applause and celebration. There was also wine on the table, so that was nice too. She walked the ramp, and the night before we had a clothing designer who had this wonderful fashion show. So Diana got to walk the entire ramp as she was being introduced. And she walked it looking wonderful, beautiful, radiant, proud, but yet, as you all know Diana, she was very humble. Your San Luis Obispo teacher was once again recognized as an exceptional teacher. Here's a little look into her past in case some of you don't know her. She resides in San Luis Obispo. Her husband, John, is the assistant superintendent for San Luis Coastal Schools. Diane and John are the parents of two sons. Her family, her mother, Barbara, and her late father, Emmons, have been involved in the community for many years. Diana's sister-in-law also attended the National Convention in Palm Springs, and yes, we did have a wonderful time. Diana will receive an only, and she'll be featured in magazines, and she'll be really recognized, but there's no money involved. So we're pleased that San Luis Obispo Republican women have given Diana this wonderful donation that she'll be able to use at her school. She's a science teacher. Her students are actively involved in the classroom and the community. Groups of her students, if you don't know that, volunteer and train to become the creature crew, learning about their classroom creatures, attending after-school training sessions prior to going into the community, and providing accurate information in a hands-on way to elementary schools, a natural history museum, Morro Bay Estuary, and the public library. Great for 7th and 8th graders. Their presentations are offered in two or more languages. At-risk English learners and special ed students are very much a part of this crew. I mean, wonderful. Recently, Diana and her students were featured in two TV documentaries in partnership with the U.S. Coast Guard and 4-H groups. Visiting her classroom, I will long remember. The excitement of the students entering the class was mirrored by the excitement she gave back to them in the learning. Students feel safe. They feel confident in what they are about to learn. She inspires others by her vision for achieving what is possible with knowledge, motivation, encouragement, and determination. She opens up the world to the learning for all students, accepting the students' strengths and their weaknesses, opening their eyes beyond the moment, filling their minds with curiosity for learning and dreams to reach for, giving from her heart, bringing joy and memories to hold for a lifetime. As a friend of mine often says, surround yourself with people that uplift you and they will bring forth your best. Yes, Diana gives her students respects, applauds their achievements, and gives them a reason to succeed in their future. She has brought forth their best. Working as a team with other teachers, Diana and her students enjoy core learning through cross-curricular units and multi-subjects. Well, this year, 2 years ago, our National Teacher of the Year was also the California winner. And then he went on and became the national winner. And my friend said, I don't think it'll happen again. But I said, I'm confident it will. And I said, if another person wins, they've got to be really talented and an exceptional teacher. But as Diana walked that ramp, we all knew that it was just a moment that she shared. But the nice part that you all didn't get to hear was that Dr. Valentine wrote a two hands-on museum of scientific principles, specimens, and models. Students apply learning and claim it as a personal possession. Diana manages content, activities with the ease and grace that appears effortlessly. She communicates the love of learning that is simply a part of who she is. Students know who is authentic and who isn't. She loves being with her students and not sharing only what she knows, but what she is about to learn. 2006 California State Teacher of the Year, 2006 Honored Alumnus of the Year at Cal Poly for math, science, and education, and our recent National NFRW Teacher of the Year. I proudly present Ms. Diana Barnhart.
President of the local Republican Women's Club, I present you with these flowers and a bunch of gratitude for the honor that you have won. You certainly are deserving.
Thank you. And thank you, school board, of course, with the kids that we have here and the parents and our wonderful administration and with you who are so supportive. I mean, how can we lose? So thank you very much. Thank you.
And Thank you, National Republican Women's Association, for recognizing Diana Barnhart for the wonderful teacher that she is, and really all the wonderful teachers that we have in our school district. Thank you very much. Let's move on to correspondence. The board didn't receive any correspondence, so we'll go on to public comment. We have one request to speak in public comment. I am going to ask tonight that we enforce the three-minute rule strictly. When the timer goes off, I will ask that you end your comments. So our first speaker is Mrs. Tacker. Yes. Mr. Millar?
I think maybe you should acknowledge that we did get quite a few emails to board members regarding the PE issue.
Yes, and thank you, Mr. Millar. Okay, Mrs. Tacker.
Good evening. I am Julie Tacker. I'm a 36-year resident of Los Osos. I happen to be a Los Osos Community Services District board member, a form holding you for your actions at your last board meeting to support the Proposition 218 assessment vote that the county is taking in the Los Osos sewer district. I'm of the opinion that your board should have abstained, as it did in 2001. That's certainly why I wasn't watching your agenda, because I know in 2001, when the Los Osos Community Services District held a similar vote, your board abstained. You are one of the largest landowners in that district. You have a tremendous amount of weight. These votes are tallied by weight. We are a community divided. You may have tipped the scale in the affirmative by casting your vote in the affirmative. I want to remind you of the families that you serve, the families from Los Osos, the families at Baywood Elementary School. One-third of those children are on the free and reduced lunch program. If those kids cannot afford their lunch, how in the hell do you think they can afford $200 a month for their sewer? The vote should be taken by the people. Those who cast their vote will dictate how the district reacts. Your district will have to come up with the funds to pay the sewer assessment or whatever the consequences of a no vote would be. I'm sorry that I'm here tonight. I didn't want to come here, but I felt necessary to express my disappointment, and I believe you should have abstained, and I will be voting on a similar item on my agenda on Thursday night, and I will be supporting an abstention for the district, the Los Osos Community Services District properties. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mrs. Tacker. Okay, let's move on to, is there anyone else who would like to address the board during public comment? We have a lot of people who would like to address the board for at least one of the items. Okay. Seeing no one else for public comment, let's move on then to reports by school staff. Are there any reports by school staff? Okay. Then let's move on to item number two, which is status of the state budget. Mr. Millar.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just a couple of quick items. Number one is that the governor has signed and vetoed many bills, and the projected shortfall is going to increase by another $2.5 billion. The shortfall has an impact on funding for categorical restrictive programs. Proposition 98 allocations are fairly well secure. However, they could be deficited, which would be basically a cash flow problem for districts. But ultimately, the amount of money that the state of California has given to school districts that's one time and outside of Prop 98 guarantee is always subject to being withdrawn when they have this kind of a deficit problem coming their way. The news on the federal measurement of states, California continues to rank in the lower third of all states in the United States in terms of funding per pupil for education. We're now at the 34th among the states in the United States for funding for education. That's all I got at this time.
Thanks, and any questions? Okay. You're actually on for item number three, resolution number 050708. GAN limit calculations for 2006-2007 and estimated calculations for 2007-2008.
Thank you. The GAN limit is an annual event that the board is required by state law to certify that it is not spending more than it was allowed by law as an outcome of Prop 13. Proposition 4 was passed that put a limit on how much state governments, local, and the actual state of California could spend. The calculation that's required establishes that we are within an increased boundary, if you will, that does not exceed COLA. We are within that boundary, and we present to you tonight the resolution that certifies that.
Absolutely. Here it comes.
Russell, we remain in that cone or that slice for the GAN amendment anyway, because we're deriving all of our income from property taxes, essentially, right? And the property taxes are also limited by the GAN amendment as far as how much increase.
Yeah, but this is a calculation that doesn't have much to do with property taxes. It has to do with expenditures. And the law was that what people tried to do immediately after
Okay. Do we have a motion?
I'm trying to, but I can't make
my light. Your light was on. There you go. Here's that. Yeah.
Okay. If there are no further board comments, then I would like to move approval of resolution number 050708, GAN limit calculations for 2006-2007, and estimated appropriations limit calculations for 2007 and 2008.
Second that motion.
Okay, it's been moved by Mrs. Roger and seconded by Mr. Buckman. Mrs. Holmes.
Mrs. Roger?
Aye.
Mr. Buckman?
Aye.
Mr. Millar?
Aye.
Mr. Unger?
Aye.
Mr. Spadafore?
Aye.
Mrs. Dickinson? Mr. Peter?
Aye.
Carries 7-0. Let's move on to item number 4. PE and Interscholastic Athletics. Dr. Valentine.
Thank you. Is this on? Is the microphone on?
It's on, but your light isn't.
That's a frightening thing, if you think about it.
The light's on. The light isn't on, but somebody's home.
Proceed as though it's off when the light's not on. Okay.
You're just going to have to raise your hand or something.
Now am I still on?
Now you're on.
I feel more comfortable now that I know it's on. Thank you. First of all, thank you very much, and I want to welcome the folks in the audience tonight who came to speak to this item, and welcome anybody who wishes to speak to any item. California Education Code requires for graduation that high school students take 2 courses in physical education unless exempted. The code permits exemptions for students engaged in school-sponsored interscholastic athletics. And at issue tonight is whether or not to grant such exemptions. The written backup for tonight's discussion provides some background and rationale for a recommendation to grant exemptions for student athletes, and we're prepared to answer questions regarding that background. But we also wanted to express recognition and respect for opposing viewpoints as well. We believe physical education is an important and necessary part of a student's school experience. We appreciate and respect the job that our physical education instructors do for kids at all levels of the school district. Tonight's recommendation includes values intended to be weighed against competing values in a way that will serve students best. For one, our recommendation is intended to uphold the value of physical education, the value of individual choice. The student's choice to participate in interscholastic sports frees up an additional elective spot for additional academic, career-based, or personal choices for the student. When evaluating options in a school district, there's always a variety of interested parties who should be heard. In preparing for this item, we met with the San Luis Obispo High School management team and a group of interested parents. We met with the PE department and coaches at both high schools. We called the California Department of Education and our own attorneys to make sure that we understood the Ed Code correctly. And finally, we shared a draft of tonight's board item with the high school principals, the PE department chairs, and athletic directors, and asked for further input. There wasn't unanimity, but there certainly was sufficient support to move forward. That said, we believe we've taken an affirmative stance towards physical education. This board has placed PE specialists at every elementary school, middle school, and high school. We've assigned PE aides at the elementary school. We've asked elementary teachers to accompany physical education specialists as part of their staff development. We've set up a multi-session staff development program for PE teachers K-12 to focus on the PE standards. We would anticipate the question of why do all this and then exempt students for athletics? In addition to the values that we described earlier, we looked at purposes. If we're encouraging students to pursue fitness, demonstrate sportsmanship, learn lessons about themselves, make positive social connections, and make lifelong commitments to a physically active lifestyle, then we see similar benefits in both regular PE and athletics. We shouldn't forget that students have had physical education for 9 years prior to arriving at high school. At that point, we feel students are prepared to put that background to use and make some choices. At this level, we feel it's appropriate for students to choose whether they would like an in-depth program focused on a particular sport or a more general program emphasizing a range of activities, or both. In our recommendation, students who participate in one sport in a year still have a trimester or semester of PE required for the remainder of the year. We would also anticipate the suggestion, why not require both for even the multi-sport athlete? We've pretty much presented our thinking on that. With that, unbalance is unnecessary and probably misdirected. We read in the paper the suggestion to require PE for ninth graders and then go forward with some kind of credit for athletics option. This certainly is an option which colleagues in other districts have chosen and which we respect and would certainly understand. As a matter of consistency, however, the perceived advantages which shaped our recommendation apply as much to ninth graders as to any others. Ultimately, there's really only one question, what is best for kids? We declare our bias up front when we weigh in on behalf of maximum alternatives for students within the existing rules. The education code allows us to look at a swimmer or a cross-country runner and agree that he or she has received the equivalent benefit of a PE class. If we were to reach that agreement, then we would have a student who swims or runs for hours a day. We would have a student who is empowered to make a permissible, healthy choice regarding the PE graduation requirement. And we would have a student with several more elective options in his or her schedule, including physical education, if the student chose that. At the same time, we would have a physical education requirement for all students from which there is no exemption or very few unless the student opts for an even greater time commitment to physical activity. We believe the education code provides recognition of this. We believe if we were to ask students, if we were to ask families what is best for kids, I think we would hear something similar to this recommendation that we present to you tonight. But we acknowledge our biases, and with those biases acknowledged, we offer this as background for tonight's discussion and would open that for the board and be available to you. Thank you.
Okay. We're going to go to the public now. And again, I'm going to ask you to limit your comments to 3 minutes. We'll call your name, and what I'll do is actually call the speaker and then call the person who would be speaking after that person. So if you're second in the queue, if you could please get ready to speak. Our first speaker will be Doug Morrow, and then followed by Jack Greer.
Good evening, and thanks for having this board meeting to give us all time to give our 2 cents worth. My name is Doug Morrow. I've taught in the district for over 20 years, mainly at the junior high level. I've coached at San Luis High School for 9 years, part of that time. I do have the standards recently adopted by you last to teach the adequate minutes in elementary school by state standards. Okay, the class sizes are in the 70s, elementary school, one teacher. We have large class sizes in junior high. And now the waiver did go through, and now we teach a two-thirds program at the high school currently. And now they want waiver. I spoke to you how I didn't think the district supported physical education. I think maybe you can see that they don't. Okay? I want to give a history about how all this came about. With the new focus on physical education came down from the obesity epidemic that's going on. For the past 30 years, adult obesity has skyrocketed. Well, not skyrocketed, gradually gotten worse. And now it's epidemic, says the Surgeon General. Okay? What has happened in those 30 years? Has athletics declined? No. Athletics has actually skyrocketed. In 1972, with the passage of Title IX, women's athletics blossomed. Great for women. It was excellent. And men's athletics has taken off, too, with the computer and the ways to access it. It has really opened up athletics in our society as a great thing. Well, how come that hasn't helped obesity? Because we left out something. Education. Activity is not physical education. Physical is not education. We need to teach how to keep ourselves healthy throughout life. It doesn't come from just activity. I grew up as a football player. I played football at Cal Poly. That's my sport. Past college, I can't play football. If that's my sport, I don't know. Is that 3 minutes?
That's 3 minutes. Okay. Thank you very much.
My closing comment then, we have all something in common. We're here to better the education.
Great.
And not better the activity.
Thank you. Mr. Greer, followed by Jim Perry.
Good evening. My name's Jack Greer. I'm over at Morro Bay High School Physical Education Department Chair. Been there about 14 years. Coached football, basketball, baseball, you name it, I've coached it. Last year, we started a partnership with Fitness Works in Morro Bay. And I would like to read what a student wrote as a summary after our visit a couple of weeks ago. This is from a sophomore, Van Rebstock. Today, September 26, the Morro Bay High School weight training class went to Fitness Works. When we got to class, we dressed out and went right to the bus circle. The bus was kind of late. When we arrived, they split our class up into three groups. There were three parts to our visit. First, my group went to the massage part. We learned how to self-massage before we started our exercises to help improve performance and decrease the risk or the chance of injury. We learned how to work a lot of our muscles, including the gastrocnemius, quads, hamstrings, biceps, triceps, lats, trapezius, deltoids, pecs, and such. I learned that if you have weak pecs, then your shoulders roll forward, they can't move back, which puts strain on your back. That's bad. The second part was actually using the equipment. I did the bench press. I did 20 reps at 85 pounds. I had a sore shoulder, but that was okay. Then I went to the pull-up bar. Was it? Oh, okay. Sorry. I pulled myself up and hung for 13 seconds, which was still pretty good considering that I was sore. I then went to the treadmill and ran on it. After a few minutes of running, I had to go to the next part. In the last part of our Fitness Works journey, we learned about the food pyramid and eating healthy habits. I learned that high fructose corn syrup is really bad. It actually messes with your body to make it produce fat. We also got to see a fancy machine that told us how fit we were. On our way out to Fitness Works, I get a free day pass so I could go back there again and work out. Fitness Works was awesome. My only complaint is that there wasn't enough time. We were there for 1 hour, and we were only on the equipment for about 10 minutes. Overall, Fitness Works was pretty cool, and I'll definitely go back sometime. My question, does the value of physical education far outweigh the value of athletics, or does the value of athletics far outweigh the value of physical education? Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Greer. Darren Averett will be after Mr. Perry.
Good evening. Jim Perry, 38 years PE professional, my final year. I've taught kindergarten through university level. I've been an athletic director, a coach, and prefer to teach. Last spring, you adopted a standards-based PE program. Now you're considering exempting a full one-third of the students at either high school from this program, right when that part of the standards is the academic portion. When the brains are ready for the academic portion of PE, you can see from the standards. Doesn't make much sense to me. Last year, you found out that PE athletics had to be moved to an elective because it didn't fulfill the requirements of physical education. So you changed it to an elective rather than a PE credit course. Now you're considering just the opposite, giving credit for athletics in place of the PE. A little bit contradictory. You have three sport athletes in freshman and sophomore year, and then they choose not to play athletics ever again. But you're going to exempt them from PE for 4 years because of the two exemptions that you're considering. You're also considering giving graduation credits for athletics. If you exempt them from PE, the 2 years that they're required to take for PE, you're going to give them graduation credits for athletics. If you have a three-sport athlete who goes 4 years, they'll never take PE. They'll play, hopefully, terrific athletic events, and they will receive 60 credits of their 270 credits towards graduation. 22% of their graduation credits will be athletics. I question that one. Sorry. I'm asking that you take the alternative. 51-242 says you may choose, which also implies that you may not choose. Please don't choose.
Mr. Averett, followed by Nate Erickson.
Good evening. My name is Darren Averett, and I stand before you as a university professor from the University of Laverne, as well as a very active CAPERD member and APERD member, being both our state and national organization for physical education. Some questions I have for the board to consider before you make these decisions that I think that you definitely need to have more conversation regarding the physical education and athletics is, can you define the difference between physical education and athletics? If you do not have a clear-cut definition of what the two are and what the difference is, then we need to do research. Thank goodness I'm back at the university level now, because that's what I do a lot of. I do a lot of research. And part of the research that I found is I go in, and within a half an hour, I find a lot of stuff on our national sites about what research is. And you go into the National Association for Sport and Physical Education, and they clearly state, our national organization clearly states, don't provide exemptions for physical education. Go to the March 2006 statement, and you will find that they clearly define, do not provide waivers for physical education. Because let me ask you this question. What are the exit outcomes that you have for your sport? Is it to win? What is the purpose of athletics? Now, if you ask the purpose of physical education, you're going to find a plethora of information, starting with the standards that you have just adopted. But now if I take a step back, being a former employee of San Luis Coastal, I'm here tonight because I care. I care about physical education. I care about this district and where it's going. You started making some great strides. In fact, I was able to come back and be hired for a part of a year to help in the push for physical education. And it makes me proud to be that. So I see San Luis Coastal as a visionary, as the leaders, as someone that we can look up to in terms of physical education. but we have to continue to do our research in order to find what are the model programs, what are they doing, what are other schools doing, are they granting these exemptions? If not, why not? Well, you can go right back to research. They have a plethora of questions that you can ask. And if you ask these questions, it's going to determine whether or not you are running a quality physical education program versus a quality athletic program. So I'm going to encourage you to please take some time and make some decisions, and you're going to have some very difficult decisions to make. Please make those decisions as you take that responsibility for the future of your students in physical education.
Thank you, Mr. Averett. Okay. Jeff Troche. Okay. Did I miss one? I'm sorry. Nate Erickson.
Sorry. Hi, my name is Nate Erickson. I'm Department Chair of Physical Education at Arroyo Grande High School in the CMR Unified School District. I'd like to thank Dr. Valentine for recognizing biases and inviting us here to speak with you. First thing I guess I need to address is that colleagues in neighboring districts to the south do not grant athletes PE waivers. We have been misrepresented in the newspaper twice. From Ryan Pinkerton to Sally Connell at the Tribune, Lucia Marr has always had their freshmen take PE. We have a two-year PE graduation requirement, and 90% of the sophomores take PE to fulfill the second year. We used to allow students to get a semester's worth of credit for participating in two varsity sports. When the state did their coordinated compliance review of the district, they found this to be out of compliance. Thus, the board voted to phase out the two varsity sports for PE credit. The graduating class of 2009 are the last students to be able to use the two varsity sports for PE credit. That is what our district does. The other thing I need to address in my short amount of time is Ed Code. As a board, you need to pay particular attention to Senate Bill 601, Senate Bill 78, Education Code 51242, and Education Code 51241. When Jack O'Connell and the California Department of Education discuss PE exemptions in any manner, they address only Ed Code 51241, because Education Code 51242 does not exempt athletes from physical education. It exempts students from attending while engaged in regular school-sponsored interscholastic athletic programs. Education Code 51242 provides a district flexibility to create an athletic PE course, as mentioned in the document. The course, however, must now meet all the requirements of Senate Bill 601, putting your board in this predicament. The statement, exempt from attending, refers to Dr. Valentine's above statement, PE athletics is an athletic practice. It is not attending physical education, it is attending practice. Thus, Education Code 51422 allows a student athlete to be enrolled in PE with a physical educator while being on the playing field with a coach that is not the said educator. Education 51422 acts as a release of liability, not an exemption from courses in physical education. There are other issues with Dr. Valentine's PE exemption. I will email all the boards, three documents, and the notes that I've made. Students who participate in athletics are not exempt from physical education. They're exempt from attending courses in PE. If a football player wants to be exempt from PE, they have to go to the course. Okay, they can go to practice, but your challenge will be creating an athletics PE course that meets all the requirements of Senate Bill 601.
Great. Thank you very much. All right. Barbara Curry, followed by Claire Batista and Jackson Allison together.
Good evening. I'm Barbara Curry, and I'm here as a parent of a high school freshman at SLO High. And my children have been the beneficiaries of the terrific PE program at both the elementary school and the junior high school. But I like to think that as a parent, my view is broader than just PE. And as a college professor in particular, I'm looking to the future for my child and every other child. And what we are concerned about is that if we implement this PE requirement, that our children will actually be taking more PE electives than they will foreign language, arts, music, and computer science. And so there are no requirements for PE at the Cal State system or for the UC system, but there are requirements in order to even apply, minimum requirements that our students have to meet. And we don't want to restrict their opportunities when they're competing with other students from around the country to get into selective colleges. So we want them to be free to pursue an elective track to round out their academic portfolio and enhance their competitiveness in the college admissions process. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Okay, Claire Batista and Jackson Allison, followed by Lynn O'Connor and Jake O'Connor.
Let me just, don't start my time yet, okay? Okay, can you hear? Okay. I'd like to speak to the spirit of the changes in the PE requirements that were enforced this year. And the spirit, like Mr. Morrow was suggesting, stresses promoting and maintaining physical fitness in order to promote overall well-being today and in the future. Given this, we could clearly identify the at-risk population of students as those that are not engaged in physical activity on a regular basis, and not the population of physically fit athletes. Since we can clearly differentiate between the at-risk population and the physically fit athletic population, it would be a serious waste of our district's resources to service a population that we know beforehand does not require servicing. Yet this is the only population that is affected by the change in the PE requirements. To repeat, the athletes are the only population of students that are impacted by the PE change. This means that we are using valuable resources to promote physical fitness amongst the physically fit. If our resources were not scarce, perhaps we could do that, but our resources could be better allocated. If we were trying to increase the literacy rate in California, we would not target AP students or those students that excel in reading. If we were trying to become more competitive in math and science, we would not choose to remediate those students who already surpass their peers in these areas. Likewise, if we are trying to enhance physical fitness and encourage lifelong physical activity, we should use the same intelligence and not target the physically fit or those that are already on the path to lifelong physical activity. Therefore, I recommend that we grant the exemption and not target our student athletes for additional PE classes, nor these student athletes for a reduction in their elective options. I would like to turn the floor over to my son, who's an example of that student athlete.
Hi, my name is Jackson Allison, and I am a freshman student athlete at SLO High. As an athlete, I play water polo and I swim, and in the off-season, I play club water polo and I do club swimming. I'm involved in activity 365 days a year, and I don't really need these resources coming my way. As a student, this trimester, I am taking Honors English, Honors Algebra 2, Spanish 4, and Latin. Rather than burn up my elective credits on PE, I would prefer to take electives that make me a more well-rounded person and a more attractive college applicant. I would like to focus on my music, and I'm looking forward to the new strings program at SLO High. Thank you for your time.
Okay, Lynn O'Connor and Jake O'Connor, followed by Jerry Ramsey.
Hi, my name is Lynn, and I'm here as a parent, a mother. Here's proof. I'm here in support of the exemption for PE. This regulation will fairly unlimit student athletes' academic choices, as several of us have already said. Student athletes who compete in at least two sports during all 4 years of high school are planning on entering competitive colleges will have room for only two electives. Our kids are now in high school. They've had multiple years of being introduced to a large variety of sports and fitness activities. These student athletes have found an activity they are drawn to enough to go through the rigors and commitment that interscholastic sports require. Taking PE in addition to the sport of their choice, as Mr. Valentine has pointed out, does not allow this subset of students to explore other interests such as art, music, drama, woodworking, metalworking, etc. I meant Dr. Valentine, excuse me. The California State Physical Education Framework states, the main emphasis of study in the ninth grade are fitness, team sports, gymnastics, and aquatics, which we're not able to comply with. Ninth graders should be encouraged to select a sport in which to specialize, learn the history, rules, and strategies of the sport, and become proficient in the appropriate skills. This is exactly what our student athletes are doing. Do kids need a PE class to learn about nutrition? One of our district's requirements for graduation is a class called Healthy Living. This course covers in depth, and this is from the course description, health, safety, first aid, personal health care issues, nutrition, as well as drug, alcohol, and violence prevention. We understand that by granting student athletes exemptions from PE, they will miss some curriculum that isn't part of the school athletics programs. However, this is comparable to students who take guitar instead of a music theory class. It may not cover the same aspects of music theory, but it teaches an appreciation of music and offers an opportunity for further exploration on the part of the interested student. As a public health nurse, I am very supportive of our district's goal, as well as the goal of our country, to raise kids who are committed to healthy lifestyles and physical fitness. We feel that high school sports offers our students a good combination of fitness, deep skill development, combined with important team building experience. The whole issue seems to be splitting hairs on what should be a common, and really is a common desire of us all. Thank you.
Can I still talk? Okay, hi.
You can have your own 3 minutes, so go for it.
Okay, hi, I'm Jake O'Connor. I am a freshman athlete at SLO High. I support having an exemption from PE. As a student athlete, I am currently practicing my sport 12 and a half hours a week. And if exempt from PE, I would like to take ceramics and drawing at this time. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Jerry Ramsey, followed by Maria Vernacchia.
Hi, my name is Jerry Ramsey, and as I did the last time I spoke with you, I'd like to start out by just having the people in the room who are here in support of this change to Dr. Valentine has mentioned stand up, because I know we have a lot of parents and students here who are interested in this.
So if you're in the back row, wave, so we know that that's what you're here for. So
a lot of these folks are here from San Luis Obispo High School, as I think you know, and I'm not going to go through what I said last time because I think most of it's been covered. The only issue that I would like to address is that, and some people have mentioned this, we are all people who are very, very interested in physical education. We have really pushed this as a key component of our children's education, both inside and outside the classroom, so our looking for this exemption is not because we don't value PE. The only other issue that I would like to address is that we actually did do some research on this. And not only have lawyers looked at this, the language is vague, and so I can understand someone standing up and saying that it doesn't mean one thing and does mean another, but that is not my impression. But we did do some research. We did not research all the schools in California. We limited our research to blue ribbon schools because we thought that that was who we were trying to be here in San Luis Obispo and in Morro Bay. And the research that we did indicates that a full 57% of the schools are currently requiring no PE if the student does four seasons in a sport, whether junior varsity or varsity makes no difference. 29% of the schools are exempting the sophomore year if there is participation in sports, and only 14% are requiring 2 years of PE, regardless of participation in sports, and all of those schools are now on my email list because they want to change and they want to be part of that 57% after hearing that they had some options. I've been speaking to mostly PTA presidents and fellow parents as well as school administrators about this, and all those contacts did was increase our list, and they'll be going and trying to transfer to being the other population as well. Thank you.
Maya?
Hi, my name is Maya Vernacchia, and I'm a freshman at San Luis Obispo High School. I was frustrated at the beginning of the school year when my counselor told me that she couldn't give me both diving and Latin. Both Latin and diving will help me get into the college I want to go to. Although I wanted to take diving, I still had to take 2 trimesters of PE. When I took the physical fitness test in 7th grade, I met or exceeded every task. Since I am just as strong and flexible now as I was then, and I can now run the mile faster since my legs have grown, I'm sure that I will have no problem passing the fitness test when we take them later this school year. If I were exempted from PE, I would choose to take a nutrition class, which I cannot currently fit into my schedule. Thank you.
Yeah, Sam Moskovic, followed by Ann Vernacchia.
Excuse me, I think my point's already been shown, so I'd like to pass.
You are exempt from speaking. Ann Vernacchia.
Hi, my name is Ann Vernacchia. And what I'd like to say is that Education Code 51242 is all over the internet. If you look at the National Association of State Boards of Education at their Healthy Schools website and you go to the state of California, it explicitly states that we have several exemptions in our state, one of which is Ed Code 51242, which states that students who participate in school-sponsored interscholastic athletic programs may be exempted from courses in physical education. In addition to that, if you look at our state website and their guidance for development of California school wellness policies, it also shows that same exemption and talks that there are 3 types of exemptions in our state, one of which is 51242. Although that I agree that PE is more than fitness, I find it very interesting that our state has chosen a fitness gram in order to measure whether or not our students need more than 2 years of physical education. As the law currently stands, students would be required to pass, which has not yet been determined what pass is, but pass the fitness gram at the end of their sophomore year in order to be exempted from junior and senior year physical education. But all that fitness gram is based on is physical fitness, which to me basically means that our state is using fitness as the means of determining whether or not a student needs physical education. I can guarantee to you that our athletes that we have, who are freshmen and sophomores, are physically fit individuals. So therefore, in my mind, they should already be to the level that the state is looking for and therefore should be allowed to be exempted from physical education courses.
Mr. Bedrigian.
Bruce Bedrigian, president of the Teachers Association, teacher of English for 28 years. And that just makes me pause for a moment because I really want to applaud the young people who've stood up here in front of this intimidating audience and spoken so articulately. So kudos to all of you. Good job. Most of the points on both sides have been made, and I crossed out what I was going to say. So here I am. I just wanted to make a few points, and then I'll stop. One of the I've coached golf for over 20 years, boys golf, started the girls golf team at Morro Bay High School. I coach football, I coach baseball. I know a few things about coaching. I wouldn't assume for a moment that I could offer the wide array of skills that our PE teachers offer our students. While the reasons for granting an exception to athletes may seem reasonable and fair-minded, most PE teachers and the executive board of the Teachers Association and this president see this granting of an exception for SLO High School athletes as a slap in the face for our PE teachers. Most PE teachers and teachers in general realize that our PE teachers offer a variety of life skills that educate students about their developing bodies and the best ways to take care of said bodies. Even the best coaches can't offer the comprehensive curriculum required by the state and run a competitive, singularly focused sport. So what are some of the solutions? Well, one of the solutions offered by the site reps and the executive board of the Teachers Association is that we simply move PE athletics outside of the school day, just like all of the other area high schools have done. If you do that, then you will open up all kinds of electives for these young people so that they can take Latin and they can take swimming and they can take diving, they can take anything that they want. That would open up an array of electives. Well, and right now, when other coaches are coaching after school, San Luis High School starts their PE athletics at 1:15 instead of 3:15 like the other high schools do. We have some real concerns when coaches insist that those students enroll in that PE athletics class or they will not play in that sport. We also have some concerns that walk-on coaches, not credentialed, are granting PE credit to those athletes, and that's not even legal. They're also taking role. So we're concerned about that. And my last point is that PE athletics is really eating into the electives, not PE. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who'd like to address the board? Please. Come on up, Marlene, and then I'll come to you, and then you.
Well, good evening, and I think the last time I was here was also to address the board regarding the PE waiver. My name's Marlene Mendes, and I've been teaching in this, well, I've been teaching PE for about 28 years. I was in charge of the aquatics program for Chino, the city of Chino in Southern California. I've taught swimming. I coach swimming. I was assistant athletic director at San Luis Obispo High School, and I've coached many, many sports between all of the different schools that I've taught at. I've been department chair for PE for several years, and presently I'm department chair. I would encourage the district to support physical education and not grant the exemptions. Physical education supports the whole student by developing the body-brain system through a well-rounded variety of activities. No students are cut from the team. Concussions and major injuries are few, and overuse injuries are pretty much non-existent. All students are valued no matter what their ability is. Students learn to respect the needs of all students and to value the safety of all students. PE students are able to meet standards without being required to miss academic classes, causing a backlog of work for student athletes and their teachers. The spirit of the exemption code is to exempt in a case-by-case situation, not a blanket exemption. Physical education is not a remedial class. If the board decides to exempt athletes, they will be fostering an attitude of entitlement and arrogance. More importantly, I'm wondering what message the student population is receiving, and is this really the message the district and community want to be fostering? I wonder how this plan will be implemented and still follow state law. I'm also wondering how the athletes will be assessed. I would suggest that if athletics were scheduled for after school and stick to the games only required of CIF, that students would have plenty of room for electives, and as Mr. Perry said, 60 credits of electives. And I would like to thank you for this careful consideration. of this very important matter, and I look forward to your support of physical education. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Becky Mendoza, and I'm the parent of two sons who attend Morro Bay High School. My son, Derek, who's a freshman, plays football, basketball, and track. And I also want to applaud the amount of physical education that he has had from kindergarten through eighth grade. He has learned a variety of sports in seventh and eighth grade, badminton, archery, dance, and from that, I feel like he now has the opportunity to choose what sport he would like to, you know, excel in. However, because of the new PE requirement implemented this year on our block schedule, Derek has 2 hours of PE every other day. And yesterday, for example, he had the 2 hours of PE where he went on a long run, then went to the football practice for 3 hours after school. He came home yesterday exhausted in clothes that were soaked through to the bone. When my son has 5 hours of physical exercise like he did yesterday, I worry about his health. I'm concerned that he ends up dehydrated and overworks his muscles. I'm also concerned that the freshman athletic program at Morro Bay High School has greatly decreased this year. Last year, there were approximately 35 freshmen who went out for football. This year's team has approximately 20. Freshman basketball had approximately 13 to 15 boys who went out last year. This year we have only one signed up in basketball PE, and approximately 5 to 7 will go on from football. I can only wonder if other parents were worried about the excessive exercise their children may have faced if they had chosen freshman athletics and discouraged their participation. If my son were exempted from PE, he could take another elective such as jazz band or drawing. He actually starts school 7 a.m. He has a zero period. He goes through till seventh period, which is when we have PE athletics, and it's considered an elective, and that goes from 3 to 4. He is in school from 7 in the morning and gets home approximately 6:45 at night, and he's willing to do that because he wants to be on the UC track. So when there's quite a few other parents that are, you know, trying to do all these things, and I really feel like the PE requirement is just really hindering his progress toward the college track. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Hi. Thank you for having me here tonight. My name is Rhiannon Henry. I'm a credentialed student at the University of Cal Poly San Luis Obispo. And as a former volleyball coach at Morro Bay High School and future physical educator, hopefully in San Luis Coastal, and also as a former Division I volleyball and track and field athlete, I think I offer kind of a unique perspective in this discussion. I liked Mrs. Allison's idea. I'd like to ask all those who disagree with the exemption to please stand. Thank you. Next, I'd like to address Dr. Valentine's earlier statements that it is the student's choice to participate in athletics. Athletics is not a choice. It is elitist. That is the nature of athletics. And I run my volleyball program that way. This is why physical education is important, because it is inclusive across all types of students and encourages collaboration among all ability levels and all students. That athletics does not do that. What's best for kids? Dr. Valentine asked. Excellent question. We want to create well-rounded citizens, and a well-rounded physical education program and a well-rounded school experience will do that. I'd also like to address Mrs. Allison's comment that the only students affected are the athletes. All students are affected by this bill. We're all in school together. School is their society. And the students in the general students in physical education, those who aren't athletes, are benefited from the talented movers and the talented athletes that will be in their classes. They get to see and how they get to work together. They learn from the people who are already doing it well, and the athletes get to have a chance to teach and help the students who are not quite there yet. Like I said, I'm a former athlete, and I know about the sacrifice. I was also played club volleyball, and I was a dual sport athlete all through high school. But you can't do it forever. Your body dies, and I'm only 25, and I'm saying that up here. I've been through two knee surgeries, and my shoulder doesn't work like it should anymore. But that's because I sacrificed my body to athletics. I can't play volleyball like I did, and I'm not going to be able to play volleyball or throw the shot put, definitely not, when I'm 45 years old. Physical education offers a well-rounded, like I've already said, they offers a well-rounded approach, shows people what they can do for the rest of their lives, and encourages them to do that keeping leading healthy lives. My last comment, closing comment, is move athletics to the end of the day. It leaves room for athletics, PE, and electives. Everybody gets a fair chance. Thank you.
Certainly. Is there anyone else who wishes to address the board? Okay, I'm going to close the public comment on this then, and I'm going to bring it back to the board. Mr. Buckman.
I spent a lot of time struggling with this. A lot of good information from the parents, a lot of good information from teachers, some information from the many people I know that have spent their time in high school playing sports and some in college playing sports and who are now more out of shape than people who did no athletics at all when they were in high school and in college but have learned to be fit. I read a lot of the material, and I guess I'm going to just ask a quick question. Is there anybody here that can explain, apply, or evaluate the use of biomechanical principles of leverage, force, inertia, rotary motion in opposition to achieve the advanced performance in combative gymnastics and tumbling? Okay, that's just one piece of the standard.
It was rhetorical.
I think it was rhetorical. I couldn't find it.
I'm going to go with the rhetoric.
Okay, and so for me that just that one piece sort of brought home for me why the state and why this district has looked towards PE standards and PE classes. And my gut feeling right now, after spending hours on the phone talking to the principal at Arroyo Grande High School, talking to the former curriculum director, the curriculum director at Lucia Marr, as they struggled to go through this, in talking with lots of other people, is I'm uncomfortable with the amount of information I have right now, and the amount of alternatives that this board has in trying to look at this and trying to make a wise decision.
Okay. Thank you. Other board members?
Right here.
Mr. Spadafore, then Mrs. Dickinson.
Thank you. You know, it's interesting. You look at everyone who's here to speak tonight, and there's a group who is very supportive of physical education. There's a group of parents who are very concerned and students who are very concerned about losing electives and how much effort is put into athletic endeavor at the schools. And I ask myself, why would two groups who care so much about the program and about the students be at such odds? Where is the goal of the district relative to what this district sees as the most important program for the students? If two groups can come tonight and discuss exact opposite feelings, then maybe there really isn't any agreement on what is best for the students. Because personally, I find it interesting that almost everyone who spoke tonight, and including myself, has to condition their comments by stating their credentials. You know, I played sports, or I was an athlete, or I was a teacher, and that's why I can speak about sports. It almost becomes something of either you're honored for what you do or you're dishonored for what you do. If you play organized sports, then maybe you're honored. If you don't and you're just in PE, maybe you're not so honored. And, you know, I played baseball, basketball, and football in high school and football and basketball in college. And I think that the discussion tonight really involves more than just, is there an exemption? Is physical education important? Are athletes, students who are athletes in organized sports, to be exempted from what physical education provides? Where does it all fall in terms of what's best for the students? It's clear that there's this balance that we hear over and over again, that we want educational quality. You want to maintain electives for the students so they can pursue classes that are going to enhance their ability to get into school, and not all students go on to further education. There's also it's clear that being in an organized sport, one of them, does not educate you fully in terms of what physical fitness is for the rest of your life. We have many examples of athletes who are in one particular sport who have no idea in terms of diet, in terms of nutrition, in terms of supplements, what's going to be the best thing for them when they're 25, when they're 30, and those are issues at high school now. You hear about steroids, you hear about other things. Now, you may not be finding that promoted in a school program for athletics, but you are going to find people who don't have any idea as to what's happening to themselves because they don't have an overall view of what's important for them. The other part is, one thing the standards makes clear is that school districts have flexibility and they have an ability to integrate what is possibly a multifaceted program for their students. So it somewhat bothers me to see us tonight at this point where you have a black and white choice, because it doesn't seem to me to be a black and white choice. I think we're faced with a situation where for 1 year we may have to follow the waiver, which has already been granted, allow the exemption so the electives aren't changed, but I believe that what we've done is we haven't really gotten to the essence of this issue, and that's what is the program that can be developed, mainly at our high schools at this point in time, that addresses all these issues. What protects the electives? What educates the students as to what's best for them in terms of their lifelong physical education? And I believe touches upon the forgotten student who can't get up and say, well, my credential is I played baseball, I played basketball, I played all this, therefore I can move away from physical education because of that. It's not that simple. I think the idea of lifelong health and fitness is much more important than just what sports you play and what you do outside the classroom, because it is an educational system. So what I'm hoping that can happen is there's an ability of our athletic coaches, of our physical education department, of our educators, of our parents, to continue to discuss the way to integrate the important aspects of physical education into our sport structure in a way that might preserve electives and allow something to be better than a decision tonight which says it'll always be this way or we'll have to exempt or provide a waiver. I think that we can do a better job, and although I'm going to vote for the exemption because I think we have to have time to develop something that's more multifaceted, I think that this situation does not lend itself to answering all those other questions. And I think there's got to be a point in time where we can come up with enough information to say this is the best of several issues that are going to benefit the students at our high schools.
I want to thank everybody for coming. The woman who scolded us did not come and speak before we voted, and she's scolding us afterwards. You're here at least when we're having our discussion, so I appreciate that. And we do listen to all of you, and it makes I come not knowing. I don't know. You know, I was talking to one of the teachers at my school who thought school board members talk about everything in closed session behind closed doors. We don't. There's laws against that. It's all up here in front of everyone, and you're part of it. So thank you for coming. And I don't know, you know, I had no idea what I would do about this because I've been thinking about it too. What should we learn? What should be requirements for graduation? You know, what do we want for every student? These are really profound questions and difficult to decide. What's the balance between what's required by law and individuality? You know, those are conflicts that are hard to figure out. But it's good that we're all talking about it. I looked at the standards that Mr. Morrow sent, and there are definite standards that are never going to be addressed, I don't think, in sports. You know, things like discuss the changing psychological and sociological needs of a diverse society in relation to physical activity, analyze the role physical activity plays in social interaction and cooperative opportunities within the family and the workplace, recognize the value of physical activity in understanding multiculturalism. That's part in social interaction, but there's self-responsibility, standards, group dynamics. And it talks about leadership and working with all different kinds of people, you know, elderly and people with special needs and disabilities. And there's so many aspects that are going to make our students better people. And I have to say, as a teacher, I've had some football players in my class who could really, you know, do some rounding out in terms of some of their skills in being human beings, you know. So nothing against football players. You guys are great. So I didn't know what I would think, but I have come up with some fairly specific ideas that I think would be good ideas. And one is, I think we need more flexibility. I am not probably going to vote for an exemption after listening to everyone, but I totally understand the wanting to go to college and take all the things you want to take. So it seems to me, if we did start sports after school, like we do at Arroyo Grande High School, and we have pretty competitive athletics, that opens up, you know, if we wouldn't have to be deciding between diving and Latin if you don't have to take diving as a class. You go out for diving, you go out for swimming, but you could take Latin. So that opens up a lot of flexibility. I'd like the flexibility of getting away from, and I want to know if this is a possibility, why does it have to be all freshmen? I know AG does that too, but why don't we, it says high school course 1 and 2 on the standards. It doesn't say 9th grade, 10th grade, and at AG the second course is 10th through 12th, but why couldn't freshmen who come in who want to take band, and figure that they're going to get course 1 and 2 in there somewhere? Why would we have to, why do kids have to be taking sports the same exact trimester? I mean, going out for sports the same trimester they're taking PE. Why don't they do their sport and take PE a different trimester when they're not doing their sport, unless they do sports 3 seasons all year? So I'm sure that's possible, but maybe they don't have to do that. I mean, there are choices in life. I'm asking rhetorical
rhetorically.
Questions. This is a rhetorical.
I'm sure there are rhetorical are question. People that play Thank all you. The sports. I played GAA. This is pre whatever that was, and I played all the sports, but that was after school and whatever. And then we can have creative options for PE. You know, AG has started an independent PE class, independent study PE, which is zero period or it's out of the 6-period day. Is it before school? Or is it, well, it's independent study, so it's any time. Independent study PE, which you can take in addition to your 6 classes, or however many classes you take. If you're at San Luis, it's not 6. Summer school PE, I agree with case-by-case exemptions. There's students who have reasons they need to be exempted from PE, and those should be, we need exemptions from PE, obviously. Let me see what else I wrote down. I think that we need, just with an idea of flexibility and getting rid of 6th period as a time that you do your sport. Also, another part of this that we're not mentioning is maybe we should look at athletics. I mean, not that that's an unpopular topic, but maybe they're too demanding. Maybe, you know, all this 12-hour days because of sports, I mean, maybe we should look at practice time and what it really takes. And I talked to my own students about this today, by the way, and they said, but we want to win, you know, so I know they want to practice hard, but it's something that is part of the discussion in a way. That's all I'm going to say right now. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Dr. Valentine, item 3 in the recommendation granting the exemptions is in view of what
Coach Erickson said, if they did two trimesters with an exemption, they wouldn't have enough instructional minutes in the other trimester to, I believe, according to my learned friend. Yeah.
If a student participated in two sports, they would be exempted from...
If they were exempted in two of the three trimesters, they wouldn't have enough minutes in the remaining trimester to fulfill their PE requirement.
Yeah, the recommendation is that the student who met the requirement by either being enrolled in PE for two trimesters or semesters or enrolled in interscholastic athletics, or not enrolled, but participating in interscholastic athletics for two trimesters or semesters would have met the course one requirement or the course two requirement.
Okay. Well, I have to say this is a difficult topic, but for me, when you have, I've actually never seen this many teachers and coaches show up, and we've had a number of Title IX, we've had Title IX for booster club funding, we've had a lot of issues, and when our professional staff is sitting here telling us, don't do this exemption, I feel inclined to support them. What I would like to have explored more is the idea of taking athletics out of the instructional day. The whole rubber meeting the road in education today is fitting all the stuff we all have to do into the instructional day. I was a mediocre basketball player in high school in San Diego at best, so I don't have any credentials. But I do remember the frequent times one of the best board members to ever sit on this board, Dr. Glenn Olker, saying over and over again, it's about academics, it's about student achievement. That doesn't mean athletics doesn't have a role, but you don't sacrifice the good for the perfect. And I'm inclined to support our teachers and our coaches, and I would like to see what we can do about alleviating the real concerns of the parents by some change to the way we do athletics.
Mr. Peter?
Sure. Several of the points that I was going to make have already been made tonight, and I thank the parents and the teachers all for coming out as well. I had the opportunity to speak to several of you. I received many emails before the meeting. And in fact, the past weekend, I was at a bike race with a large group of 9th and 10th grade boys, my son and some other boys, and not all of them were from our two schools. They were from schools all around, and I took the opportunity to ask the boys at the bike back to me was that they were spending a lot more time doing physical exercise in those courses than they were doing health, education, physiology, those sorts of things. I had hoped, please hold your applause. Let me finish my point. I had hoped that I would find that there were more of those types of educational activities taking place in those courses. And maybe we have a problem, in fact, with our standards. Maybe we should be looking, like John says, at a more comprehensive program and developing more rigorous standards.
Aren't they just new?
Well, I think they are, but maybe, I mean, there's Mark read one that I don't think anybody in this room could understand. So maybe we need to take a closer look at the standards themselves. But for me, what this issue really boils down to as a parent of a high school student and a junior high student who are both college bound, I strongly support choice for those students. And I find myself feeling that as a parent, by the time I have a student who's in ninth grade, who's had 8 years of good physical education, comprehensive physical education in this district, that it becomes my responsibility to help and continue directing them along a path of physical education for their future and educating them and talking to them about nutrition. I think there's only so much that we can do. And I think when they hit that critical age of 9th and 10th grade where they're beginning to make decisions about where they want to go in their life, what they want to do when they move beyond this district, that is when it's important for them to have the choice to take those additional electives. So what I would support is, certainly at San Luis High School, I don't think we have the issue so much at Morro Bay, is moving the athletic PE or athletic PE beyond the end of the day, not during this fifth period. And at this point, I would support the exemption.
Mr. Buckman?
I'm listening and learning as we go through this discussion, and I appreciate what's being said. What I keep coming back, what I keep coming back to and what I keep hearing is that there are options that we're hearing just to the south of us from the CMR. There's an option that's come from our own staff. There may be other options that, I mean, we're not the only the only two high schools in the state that are facing this dilemma. This is a statewide mandate, and we can't be the only people that have dealt with this. And what I'm hoping is that we can make the decision that's best for the children.
Doctor, well, we have a motion. Do we have a second?
We do.
We have a motion, and we have a second from Mrs. Roger.
With a comment.
We're going to have more discussion. Dr. Valentine, the motion is to
table it.
To table this until the next meeting when we have some more alternatives. I'm going to go to Dr. Valentine, and then we'll see if there are other board members who have comments on this before we take a vote.
Well, just to help clarify, perhaps for the sake of the discussion, that whether the whether athletics occurs during the school day or not during the school day may affect the number of electives that a student has available. But if athletics is moved outside of the school day and the student is required to take PE within the school day, or if athletics is moved outside the school day and the student is exempted from PE during the school day, the exemption creates a different and greater number of electives for that student than requiring PE would. So the question still becomes whether or not, and we declared our bias coming into this, that our bias was on the side of student choice, that even if we move it outside of the school day, an exemption would create greater amounts of student choice, and we could do both. I guess I'll hold on that for now.
Okay. Mrs. Dickinson?
I have one quick question. Are we actually teaching aquatics with dry water, dry land aquatics?
No, we're not. I mean, the suggestion was to bring in first aid or something like that to water safety to teach as a subject. But the other thing, and just in response to Mr. Buckman's suggestion, if I could, we can look at the number of alternatives that there are. One is moving it outside of the day, which increases electives. The other is not to do that. One of the arguments, by the way, for not doing that is that students who then travel with their teams and so forth are, in fact, leaving their athletic class rather than leaving some academic class, and there may be some advantage to that. But whether we do that or not, ultimately the decision, there isn't a compromise decision so much. I mean, either there will be an exemption for PE or there won't.
Mrs. Roger and then Mr. Millar.
Motion to not make a decision tonight, but rather to defer this to the next meeting, because I don't feel clear enough in my own mind to make a decision. I really need to digest more, because I've had a whole wealth of information that I hadn't received previously. Previously, we have heard from parents a number of times. We've not heard from our own professional staff. So I'm sorry. I wish I was really clear in my own mind about how I wanted to go on this. Then I'd be willing to make a decision tonight. But I need to digest what I've heard from everyone. Therefore, I supported that motion.
Thank you. Dr. Valentine, I just want to make sure I understood what you were saying. If we looked at moving athletics outside the school day, it didn't occur to me that we would do that and then grant waivers from PE. Why would we grant them a waiver for PE if they had to go to athletics and it was outside the school, if they were doing athletics outside the school day?
I think basically for the reasons that we shared tonight, that if the board reached a comfort level that a student was achieving the equivalent of a PE class through athletics, and there is a question, then by exempting the student from PE because of that belief, the student would then have an elective choice in their schedule. Without an exemption from PE, the student would have to take PE, and there would be one fewer elective choice available to the student.
We're right, but then the student would have a class period where they're not taking athletics, because now athletics are outside the school day, where they could make some other course choice, correct?
Right. It creates more electives by moving the PE outside of the day and not offering it as a class. It creates even more electives by creating an exemption outside of the school day.
I understand that part.
Right.
I'm just trying to figure out how to accommodate the concerns of the parents without granting an exemption, because I don't think it's a good idea. So if we don't grant exemptions, they have to take 2 years of PE.
And so forth. And anyway.
It's hard for me to support the motion to table this till the next meeting, because I won't be at the next meeting. So.
Well, could I comment on the timing on this part of this? And that's part of the timing in bringing this forward in the middle of October is that if we were to change our course right now, our course of action right now, and grant an exemption for PE, there would be sufficient time to reprogram students for the second trimester at San Luis Obispo High School and the second semester at Morro Bay High School. If we defer the decision, we're really talking probably about the next year of whether we would grant exemptions or not, because it wouldn't be time to reprogram the students for the remainder of the school year.
Mr. Peter?
Well, just to respond to one point, I think the elective issue is a really important point, but another one that I heard here and one I talked to parents about too was the fact that the kids are getting potentially so much, those students who choose to participate in sports are potentially getting a lot of exercise in the day, 4 or 5 hours.
Yeah.
Go
ahead. Sorry.
I think that's one issue, but again, for me, I'm not going to support the motion to table this. For me, I think it's really important. I'm speaking as a parent again, that my kids have the choice to take those additional electives, whether it's Latin classes, music, drafting, art, whatever it may be, or additional courses in physical education or weightlifting, which my son is choosing to take this year. I support the choice. At the end of the day, it's about choice. I think that's the best thing for our students.
Chris, let me just. It doesn't matter. Never mind.
Okay. Mrs. Dickinson and then Mr. Jones.
Speaking of scheduling, I don't think we should just table it either. I think we should decide. But if we decided not to do a sixth period, what do you call that, athletic, whatever? It's fifth? The last period of the day. Oh, yeah, fifth period. Would that start right away? With like next trimester, could we affect scheduling and this pressure to take a class freshman year in PE, if that's, lifted the pressure? So they could if freshmen realize, maybe they can't be exempted, but they can put off PE till their junior or senior year, and they have that extra class, they can schedule an elective. Vote on that exact same time.
We do have a motion on the table.
Okay.
I'm going to let Mr. Jones speak.
Thank you. Will Jones, principal at San Luis Obispo High School. Just a couple of points of clarification for the board. First of all, regarding the number of athletic programs in which freshmen can be enrolled during the school day at San Luis Obispo High School is only six. There are only six sports in which freshmen are enrolled during the school day, during fifth period, which is the last period of the day. All other freshmen participating in athletics are participating after school. I think that's an important point to keep in mind as you think about the idea of moving athletics after school. That does change when they become sophomores. All junior varsity and varsity athletes are participating in their sport during their athletic PE period and fifth period. Another point to make is, I think that one of the uncomfortable things of sitting in the audience and listening to the conversation is the kind of win-lose atmosphere that's developing in this conversation. And I've been thinking about this for a long time, as it affects our school, as it affects our PE department, as it affects our athletic program. I think it's important to keep in mind that at San Luis Obispo High School, we have 390 freshmen in our ninth grade class, and roughly 100 to 120 of those students are going to be participating in athletics, one sport, a smaller number in two sports, a smaller number in three sports. We have wonderful new standards for education, for physical education. We have a physical education staff that's going through a significant amount of training in order to deliver an extremely rigorous program that will try to make an attempt to meet those standards. So when we're making a decision, I think that if we can consider that considerably more than two-thirds of our ninth grade students and 10th grade students will be participating in that rigorous PE program, which will give them what they need to make decisions about fitness for the rest of their lives. And we have another smaller group of students who are participating in athletics, that we can really look at it as a win-win situation. It isn't as if no ninth grade student or no ninth grade or 10th grade student will ever be participating in a PE class. And there is the option for students to continue to participate in PE. So in order to respect both the point of view of the staff who are teaching physical education and to respect the point of view.
Well, I'm really on the fence about this. I came in and I've sent emails to all the parents saying that I absolutely support student choice, and that's from my experience. One of the first votes that I lost on the board was the computer requirement that I felt took away electives from Morrilby High School students. And I felt that at the time, and I still feel, that we should be implementing computer education throughout all of our classes, not just as a standalone class. What I'm feeling is that we're talking about athletics and we're talking about PE. And athletics, I think, as you pointed out, is a skill-based class that's focused primarily on winning through teamwork, except in individual sports. I understand that. I don't see athletics as PE. But I don't see, but on the other hand, I hear Mrs., oh gosh, Melendez, I think, Mendez from Morro Bay High School, talking about how on the day that, what? Yeah, Becky Mendoza, thank you, talking about how her son on the block days is doing 2 hours of physical education and then doing practice for football after school. That's too much to me. That doesn't make any sense to me. What I'm disturbed about is here we've got athletes who I am willing to say are getting enough exercise. I think they are. And I would like to say you don't need more exercise, but maybe you need to have that kind of education that our PE specialists are talking about to teach them how to live healthy lifestyles, getting away from the television set, getting away from McDonald's, and getting away from Burger King. Those are lifestyles that I think PE teaches, and they're important. Now, yeah, we can talk about locomotion, and I'm assuming that's talking about how to make jumps and stuff like that. I don't see that taught normally in athletics. I don't get the connection. So, you know, I'm not sure whether I'm going to say I will vote for the exemption if I can be assured that athletes are going to learn the skills that they need to have from PE, or I'm going to say no exemptions. This is an opportunity. I'm looking at this as an opportunity to say, what can we make? What can we do about making PE about fitness, and what can we do about making athletics about learning healthy lifestyles? I don't know what the answer to that is. Moving PE to the end of the day, sure, or moving athletics to the end of the day, yeah, that's one solution. But again, at least at Morro Bay High, we're talking about the two-hour block. Part of the problem is this affects basically freshmen and sophomores. I'm wondering, and I heard this from a PE coach, are coaches that are teaching athletics at 115 also receiving their stipend as well as their salary for teaching a period of their normal teaching day, plus getting additional money for teaching that. I'd like to know how that one works. That's Dr. Valentine, can you explain that to me?
Yeah, to the extent that the teacher is teaching a class, they're paid as a professional, and they're compensated for that. To the extent that they're working after school and coaching athletics, there is a contractually agreed upon stipend for that.
So there's an expectation that somebody that teaches the final period of PE is then teaching PE for their regular salary, and then they're expected to teach after school in addition for the stipend that they're getting, right?
They're not expected to. They volunteer to.
Volunteer to, but the expectation is that they will teach, that stipend is paid for teaching after school, right?
Correct.
Okay. And that was something that I had, and I see some of the folks back there shaking their heads about that, which makes me kind of concerned. I want to see kids. My son was a musician, and anything that impacted music bothered me, because I wanted him to be able to take as much music as he possibly could. And again, that goes back to the free choice. I don't know yet. I'm still going to think about how I'm going to vote, because I'm not satisfied. I'm not satisfied with my choices, and I'm not satisfied with what I'm hearing about the either or and making sure that our kids are healthy for life. I was not a kid that was successful in PE. Clearly not. I was one of those kids that I could tell you horror stories about my PE experiences, and it wasn't until I got some choices in PE that I actually became physically fit. So I have a lot of invested in this, also making sure as a possible split the baby on that one, that instead of two exemptions at Morro Bay High School, they're allowed one exemption.
Yeah. Yeah, the proposal says that a student would receive one trimester's exemption for one sport.
Mm-hmm.
If a student participated in two sports, the proposal would indicate that they would have two trimester semester exemptions. What I'm hearing Mr. Unger suggest is, regardless of how many sports, there would be one exemption.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was one thing I was thinking.
Can I ask a question about that?
And I don't know how it would work at Morro Bay. Well, Morro Bay, instead of getting two at Morro Bay right now, the proposal is they would get both semesters if they took sports for both semesters. I'm saying maybe one, but I'm just putting that out there as a possible solution, because I want kids to get electives, and I want kids to be physically fit, and these are not opposing things. Mr. Buckman and Mr. Millar, and then Mr. Peter and Mrs. Dickinson.
Thanks. I want to make one statement and then go somewhere else. But if we actually take the time to do this correctly and move, find, maybe look at alternatives for PE, we not only are going to be working with the student athletes, but we're also opening up opportunities for AP students and for other students. At the CMR, the research that I've uncovered, and I'm not sure 100%, but at LuCMR, they have an online course, they have an independent study course, and they offer this in summer school. And the comment that was made to me by the principal at the high school was, a lot of the AP students take this PE requirement in summer school so that they can take more electives during the school year. And so if we handle this in a way that's best for all students, and do this in a, you know, a little more time, and I don't know how we get the time, we not only are helping the student athletes, but we may be helping other students at the high school. So I'm inclined to maybe withdraw my motion in favor of Chris's. If there's some understanding, and maybe the board allows, that we discuss this more in depth in the future, because I think a lot of us are just, I mean, I'm being presented with one solution, and I've already found sort of three or four others in a very short period of time.
I think Walter and then David.
I just think, because I originally, when this issue first came up, I started formulating what I thought might be a great solution, which would be along the lines of the student athletes wouldn't have to exercise, they would have a healthy living class or something so that they got the education part of it. But then what really occurred to me is these kids, I would hope, have had healthy living education from first grade through eighth grade. They've had 8 years of it. When does it become the parent's responsibility to take over, or when does it become a student's choice? They're ninth graders now. They're 15. Some of them are 16 years old or 14 and 15 years old. And they're beginning to formulate other interests. Many other options are open to them, music classes and art classes, and other options are available. And I think you have to decide when do you think the school district's responsibility begins and ends, and when does the parents and the families begin and end? And I think for me at ninth grade, it's reasonable to think that parents and students are ready to make choices about what they want to do from that point forward.
Well, I totally believe in choice because I teach special education, and my view is everyone needs an individual education plan. It should be tailored to individuals. So I agree with that, but I'm wondering if the parents are so concerned, which they should be, about electives. And I had a son who had to quit band for a semester to take PE. Well, he was a basketball player. Another one played baseball, but I'm getting off my point. If parents are concerned about electives and they have this period open up, that's not good enough, because I could see from some of the faces, you know, that's not good enough. That's not enough electives. So it can't be just the electives issue. But what I'm hearing from Mr. Peter and some of the parents, in a way, is my students, but the standards aren't really that important. We don't need these. Our families can teach us to be healthy, and we're fit, and we don't need these standards. That's kind of what I'm hearing. So I'm thinking that the standards are not just about fitness, and they're not just about knowing how to eat healthfully. I think they're about group dynamics, which is something that your family is not going to be. So anyway, I'm just noticing that some people think the standards aren't really that important, which is part of it. It's not just electives. I can see that from what I'm hearing. Also, Mark, we wouldn't really have to be so creative if we just say they can have exemptions. So all of your, you know, thinking of independent study and all these, there wouldn't be, we can still do that. If we don't have exemptions, we'll have to do that.
If I can, just Chris.
Yeah, please.
It would be my understanding, Adrian, if we gave the exemptions, they would not have to participate in the PE program at all, in the PE standards at all. And if we were to offer them in an alternative manner, or maybe there's something else out there in the state, but what we found so far is there's ways to offer them as alternatives, independent study, summer school, I think online right now in the CMR, that they would still could still fulfill their requirements and still get the benefit of the standards, and it would not impact their ability to take electives.
Yeah, thank you. I just want to make sure, Mark, you withdrew that motion to the table. That's gone off the table.
No, he did not.
Let me clarify. I would be happy to withdraw the motion. I like Chris's suggestion of maybe splitting the baby. I would withdraw the motion with the understanding that the board's going to come back and explore this in depth and look at as many alternatives as possible, because I think there still may be better ways to do this for our children.
I just want to clarify.
Either call a table the motion and vote on it, or withdraw.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Millar.
Okay. My concern is this. I think that if we table this and we bring it back several meetings down the road, all we're doing is creating a void for the next several months that causes the problem to continue without any type of direction or resolution. I think tonight we should either grant the exemption along with the waiver, with the understanding that there's something here that's not coalescing, there's something here that's not meshing. And I think there's a point in time where we have to decide as a school district are the standards that the state has asked us to implement through physical education are important enough, or are a group of them important enough to incorporate into what we do in terms of our educational program? And if so, what does that mean? So integrated into what we're doing, and what is it that we should be doing in terms of the physical education of our students, including those who are in athletic programs?
You're going to make
a
motion?
The question on the pending motion.
So we still have a motion on the floor.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Well, is there anybody else that would like to speak to the motion? Okay, seeing none. We have a motion on the floor to table this to the next meeting and have it brought back to us with more alternatives. Is that correct? Okay. All in favor? All opposed?
No.
No. No? Okay. The motion does not pass. I'm going to make a motion that we... I want to think about it. Does anybody else have a motion?
Yeah, I have a motion.
Go ahead.
Okay, Mr. Peter.
But no, you got it. No, I make a motion that we conditionally grant the exemption to allow the flexibility in the scheduling this year, understanding that there is an essential problem here between the value of physical education and the exemption that students who perform on athletic teams have and have learned to expect as they go along through high school. I think there are valuable standards in physical education that is not being taught on the athletic field. And I think that at some point in time, the staff that we have who feel so strongly about physical education and feel so strongly about the time that the coaches have with their students, that there must be a place that we can meet to integrate this in a better way so the program is more cohesive. So I would suggest, my motion is that we grant the exemption conditionally this year, so there isn't a hole for the students who are trying to get the electives that they're used, that they have, and that the waiver and the exemption are tied together with a determination in the future of how we're going to address physical education and the participation in athletic teams.
May I ask for some clarification? Sure. What does conditional mean?
It's for this year.
For this year only. Okay,
I'll
Mr. Peter.
That. I'll
okay,
that.
So the motion we have on the floor is that we will grant the exemption for this year only, right? And that it will come back to the board prior to time for scheduling of fall 2008 with a plan.
When would be the latest that decision could be made? Thank you. I wanted to, Mr. Zotovich, are you in the audience? Yeah.
Okay. So we have that motion on the floor in a second. Mr. Peter, the motion is to grant the exemption for this year, bringing it back in February for further discussion and alternatives to this so that hopefully we can find a win-win on this. Is there any other discussion on this? Mrs. Dickinson.
I just wonder, why is that different from just saying, you know, you can take course one when you're a junior, so don't worry about it. Sign up for all those electives that you want right now. How is that different in effect, though? Instead of excusing them for their whole
high
school.
Then you'd be giving up an elective in 11th grade or 12th grade.
Not necessarily, because by 11th grade we might exempt everybody. You don't know.
Yeah, you'd be exempting.
Call the question.
Okay. Is there any other we need to have support on that. Is there any other discussion on this motion? So the motion is to grant the exemption for the following two trimesters and next semester only. Right?
That's correct. And I just want to make one additional statement. My feeling in my heart is that this is the beginning of a process that has to take place to integrate what's important in terms of physical education with a standalone sports program in terms of what's going to be, in the long term, the best for our students on a comprehensive means. It's the beginning of a program.
I'm going to support the motion. However, I will not support this in February unless we have alternatives and unless I can be convinced that there is that that athletics equal, that there is a healthy living PE component in the athletic program.
Are you modifying the motion that's pending? Are you modifying the
motion
that's pending? It sounded like you were modifying the motion.
No, I'm not modifying the motion. I'm suggesting that I...
No.
And who else was a no?
Adrian, Marilyn, and Walt
were no's.
4-3, you're
right. 4-3. Thank you. We'll take a 5-minute break. We still have a couple of agenda items. Board members, could we gather back so we can complete the meeting, please? Okay, item number 5. Revised strategic plan objective for visual and performing arts, Dr. Matakovich.
Yes, thank you. To review our previous discussion, the board has requested that staff bring forward an alternative strategic planning objective related to visual and performing arts. The strategic planning objectives have been developed administratively to capture the purpose behind certain funding recommendations. The visual and performing arts current objective reads, to develop a delivery system for standards-based visual and performing arts instruction, which complements our efforts to raise student literacy and mathematic performance. The intent of this original objective was to establish a delivery system for visual and performing arts, which supplemented the current program using visual and performing arts categorical funds. As well, it was to reiterate the priorities of instructional scheduling, funding, and professional development, which would remain focused on the areas of literacy and mathematics. In the board's discussion, there was a concern about marginalizing visual and performing arts as a complementary program rather than establishing it as a fully integrated sequential standards, K-6 standards-based lessons in these areas. Currently, teaching artists, working with our elementary school principals and teachers, have begun to deliver these lessons. The plan is that every elementary school teacher has a teaching artist assisting them in the delivery of these lessons. Ongoing state funding supports 8 visual arts lessons, 8 theater lessons, and 4 dance lessons embedded in our instructional program. The initial feedback from our classroom teachers is positive with constructive remarks. The teaching artists, besides delivering the lessons, are also engaging the classroom teachers in the lessons. This professional development aspect is essential to ensuring the integration of the visual and performing arts standards into our program. Our teaching artists will be meeting throughout the year to discuss, adjust, monitor their lessons. They will be sharing students' work and collaborating on their best practices. With the input from the classroom teachers and principals over the course of the year, it's hoped that these lessons will be embedded into this core instructional program. Given the K-6 classroom support and our elementary music specialists and 712 visual and performing arts program specialists, Our staff's fully prepared to make this recommendation to you, which is that the board adopts the revised objective, which is to develop a fully integrated standards-based visual performing arts program, K-12. So we're available for comments and appreciate your feedback.
It's really been an interesting process, and actually an honor to be included in the committee work that led up to this. I started before I was on the board, and got to participate, I hopefully, within the Brown Act as I became a board member, and to watch the collaboration between the community and the district, and to watch the district move with such speed to put in place a program. I went to the last meeting, which was just last week, Mary, was, and I had no idea that the staff that was at the last meeting, it was incredible. So I'm just thankful that I could have participated.
Mr. Millar.
Thank you. So if we adopt this revised objective, what additional steps will your committee and staff have to undertake in order to come up with this fully integrated curriculum?
Well, the challenge, Mr. Millar, is to ensure that these lessons are embedded into our instructional program. And, you know, I mentioned that we were getting constructive feedback from our classroom teachers and principals. We scheduling these artists and working with the content that the classroom teachers would like us to be working with is a really critical step. So right now, we're in the process of delivering the lessons, working with the classroom teachers, and looking at the content pieces that these lessons can complement. And, you know, it's visual arts, it's theater, and it's dance in our PE classes. So we hope over the course of the year and over the course of the next few years that we'll develop our delivery, that our classroom teachers will be engaged along with the teaching artists, and that we'll have a fully embedded program over the course of the next few years. So.
I am so excited about this language. And when I ran for the school board, that was one of the things I ran on, was wanting us to think about art and music and theater and visual and performing arts being core curriculum, just like math and English and science and social studies. So I just have this circle of this huge yes, and I think it's exciting and wonderful, and I am totally thrilled. And I want to thank Mr. Spadafore for suggesting this language change, and Dr. Mitakovich and everyone who's worked on this, the specifics of it, which are very exciting and involves many, 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 many people. And so thank you so much. I think it's wonderful.
All right. Any other comments? Mrs. Roger.
I want to make sure that I understand.
Arts program K-12. So we want to replace the current objective with that objective that's stated in our recommendation.
I'm sorry, Dr. Mitakovich. Where would I find that on page 5.1?
5.2.
To develop a fully integrated standards-based visual and performing arts program, K-12. Okay, and then my question, do we anticipate the need for any outside oversight on implementation of this?
Well, we hope over the course of this year to develop the assessments based on the students' performance in each of these areas. So we hope to have an evaluation plan for you that will reflect how well we're doing in terms of delivering the standards.
But But that's something we would develop.
We would do it
our
internally.
Our district would develop that.
Correct. Yeah, with the teams of specialists that we've been working with.
Okay. I'll move approval. Oh, Mark? Okay. Please, I'll defer.
Thanks. If it's okay, I'd like to move that we adopt the revised objective to develop a fully integrated standard-based visual and performing arts program, K-12.
Well, I've had a change of heart. I'll second it.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Carries 7-0. Let's move on to item number 6, which is a further discussion of expulsion procedures. Dr. Matakovich?
Yes. At the September 18th board meeting, staff provided you an overview of our suspension and expulsion procedures. You made some procedural suggestions. You suggested that there was a need to debrief with the administration following each hearing. You requested a checklist of interventions to be included in each expulsion packet. You suggested the removal of a statement in our administrative regs that the board refers students to for special education assessment, and so that statement.
Okay, we'll start with Mr. Buckman, and we'll just move on down the table this way.
It was my understanding, and I think I've seen it actually in writing, that one of the things that the board also asked was that we look to the consistency between school sites. And so I'd like that wording included, if possible, if the board supports me.
Could you know, refresh my memory, consistency between school sites vis-a-vis what, Mark?
Consistency in how recommendations for suspension and expulsions are brought forward and handled, and also consistency and between school sites, just with what I mentioned.
I had a question. It's actually on page 6.4, and it's either a paraphrase or a quote from the Ed Code 48915. An expulsion is an action taken by the board for severe or prolonged breaches of discipline by a student. You know, we have a lot of expulsions that do not fit that category.
Except for single active grade.
Well, yes, I know. So, you know. Thank you, Mark. There are other areas, but I'm not sure that is always the case that we end up with. Now, I do know that there's specific acts that require an expulsion immediately, but and the reason I started thinking about this is at the end of the expulsion hearing, we have to make, if we elect to expel, we have to make a determination of whether or not the safety of students is involved, or the student being expelled represents a continued threat to the safety of other students, and then other means of correction have failed. So that's kind of what I would bump into over the years, is kind of feeling like neither one of those categories really applied. And I just raised that. I mean, I don't think that we have some issue of having, you know, expulsions brought forward to us to consider that, you know, that didn't need to be brought forward or anything. It's just that it kind of surprised me when I read that language. Also, how often do we actually utilize, and maybe if Will and if our guys are still here, thing along the lines of a stipulated probation or stipulated outcome, and we've actually done this before where we sort of craft a response that the parents and ultimately the student agree to. And I'm wondering if we could use some on-campus suspension program or something similar to that to craft outcomes. And this is just, I'm just trying to respond to my own personal ill ease with some of the Hobson choices we have to make when it comes to expulsions. So anyway, so some form that allows us to take disciplinary action against the student, leave them, or let's say corrective action as far as the student is concerned, but leave them in the school setting and intervene in some meaningful way. That's kind of what I'm hoping that our course of conversations about the expulsion suspension procedures and processes ultimately lead us to. And I've already brought up Pacific Beach and, you know, the promise and difficulties and complexities of trying to do something through that school. But that's really my energy around this issue is more the unhappiness with some of the limited choices we have. I will comment one thing on Mark's concern about consistency between sites. I want to reiterate that this is not a discipline system. This is a student-centric discipline system. Mm-hmm. So while, yes, we don't want to be unfair and violate due process, it really, the decision needs to gravitate around what's in the best interest of the individual student given the totality of the circumstances involving that child. I mean that just as my comment on Mark's point. I actually want to thank Mark for bringing this whole idea of let's look at suspensions and expulsions and what and how we handle them afresh, and I appreciated him bringing it forward. But those are kind of my comments on this.
Am I lit? I don't mean to be lit at this time.
This is a personal question.
Shall we comment?
What's in the coffee?
Just three things just from what you all have said just now. Maybe we don't...
Can require...
Okay. All right. Well, I do think it's good for parents to come and see what it's like sometimes. The other thing was... I also think the consistency thing, I'm not sure we have to spell that out, because the policy is consistent, and the consistency comes with the board. They bring them, and the board is the one who provides the consistency, because it is going to be individual. Okay. Go ahead. I have one more thing to say. Go ahead.
Answer that one.
Go ahead.
Let me just talk to the consistency. The one thing that jumps to my mind on consistency is... At Morro Bay High School, if you commit an expellable offense, you don't walk at graduation. Expellable offense any time during the school year.
Okay.
At San Luis High School, if you commit an expellable offense or a suspension, I think it's starting in April, you don't walk at graduation. That's inconsistent, and I think it may even open us up to some liability. If I'm a parent at Morro Bay High School, I might say, well, if my kid went to... that's one of my concerns. And then you guys know what my other concern is.
Okay. So it wasn't consistency in what's brought, but consistency in what happens because of the decision.
I also have some concerns about what's brought, but I understand that that's much harder to get our hands around. But
okay.
There are some real consistency problems.
But that's where the board can equalize that, though. The board can even that out. Something can be brought, and we can just... Well, we can decide not to expel someone or whatever, even though, you know, we just thought it wasn't that necessary. The one other thing I wanted to say, though, before I'm done, Chris, can I say one more? Or do you want to talk about that one thing?
Well, I was just going to say, I think the concern that you had was not the choice to expel or not to expel, but the conditions under which someone is brought for expulsion. Yeah.
That is the concern.
Do you want to finish up?
Yes, I do. This was regarding the what we as a board had suggested earlier. I just had a question about that, and I emailed Dr. Matakovich about this one. I know that there have been times, not recently, but in expulsion hearings in the past, when we've kind of, as a board, wondered, at least I have, maybe this student should be assessed for special education. Maybe there's some support there that would be so helpful to them. They just need more support. And that's what special education services are intensive support for students.
And my colleague, I'm very uncomfortable with the board referring students to special education assessment and a student success team as a regular education function. So I'll leave it at that. And I could not support this if special education assessment were left in. I don't know, Mrs. Yeah. Yeah, sure.
On that, well, can the board, can we still then recommend a student study team? That's what I'm talking
about. It's a student success team or a student study team is a regular ed function. I almost feel like what we do is that, and I think that some of the expectations, some of what we've seen is that students have had numerous student success or student study teams. One thing that might almost be as germane, if not more germane, in terms of our list of possible interventions for students would be safe meetings, for example. Recommendations for safe meetings, and that's a safe meeting is a group of community members from different agencies who get together to provide supports to the student and their family. But I don't know that we could compel a family to undergo a safe meeting without their compliance. Certainly, it could be another one of those things that we could recommend. But again, that's something that Melissa Musgrave deals with, I believe, every day.
What did you decide about safe meetings?
No, I'm saying I don't know if we can recommend those or not. I see that as those as regular education functions, not special education functions, and I mean I'm guessing that if we as part of a recommendation for a suspended expulsion suggested a student success team meeting, that would be something that would be part of the conditions for the suspended expulsion.
Well, that's all I'm talking about, because it would be the student study team or student success team that would determine that, but just because that would be a venue, though, where that could come out of.
And that would be part of the interventions that we could talk about.
Good. Okay, that
Mrs. Roger
great.
Has been waiting patiently.
Thank you. I understand Mr. Buckman's point about equally applying participation in graduation ceremonies from one high school to the other. If a student has been, wherever a potential expulsion might occur, expulsion recommendation might occur, we really cut the legs out from under the people there to make decisions based on their knowledge of the student, what the history has been, if this behavior is an anomaly. I think that they have to have some latitude in what they send forward. And it doesn't just come to us once they've decided to send it forward. It goes through a whole pre-expulsion process with Dr. Matakovich and others. And before we see it, it's been reviewed by a number of people. So I would be very hesitant to make things so cut and dried, because I think there has to be a little latitude at the site and then latitude with the assistant superintendent to make a decision about whether or not to go forward with an expulsion recommendation.
I'd like to make a motion that we go ahead and accept the item that's been brought forth with the addition that there be consistency at the school sites, and leave it just at that. At that statement, and not try to be prescriptive. I think I died for lack of a second, a third, a fourth, a fifth, a sixth, and a seventh.
We asked for direction.
Okay, do you feel like you have enough direction? Because Mr. Buckman has some very serious, you know, he has concerns about consistency, and sure, but
well, I had my light on,
yeah.
Too,
oh, I'm sorry, here, so. I didn't see it. Your hand was in the way.
Make sure my number's on.
But Mrs. Roger, I understand, wants to make sure that there is flexibility too. one of the things that we've talked about, I think it's fair to say in closed session, is we want to make sure that you know, as it were, justice is done fairly, and that
constitutional that requirement.
Yeah, absolutely. That whole due process thing. Thank you, Walter, Judge Millar. I think there's we want to make sure that there are never concerns about social justice issues. I believe was one of the discussions we had. Mr. Millar.
Thank you. I just was going to propose a way of that, and it comes up a lot when we do. Boy, I can't remember how long ago it was, but we reviewed all of the board policies and ARs, and we used the CSBA recommended stuff and went through a whole lot of things. Sometimes it's better not to say a lot because it protects our discretion and our flexibility. And I would really be reluctant to impose a set requirement about special ed evaluation, partly because they're the same reasons I think Marilyn mentioned too about the staff and student, you know, staff involvement, teacher involvement, counseling involvement. Hopefully we're picking up those students when we do need a manifestation hearing or we do see that their behaviors are a manifestation of some underlying special ed need. But I wouldn't want to see it as a hard and fast requirement.
What's that?
That an expelled student or a student in an expulsion hearing be evaluated for special ed.
Adrian, and then Marilyn.
Go ahead. I think that Walter kind of covered that.
Okay, well, I just wanted to clarify that in terms of latitude, the kind of latitude that I think the site administration should have, or I would like to see them have. One example of that might be, and these are things that we have seen over the years. I think there is a difference in the way that the administration views and whether they decide to bring forward a student who has a little penknife found in his car for purposes of working on his stereo, which is a violation to have a knife on campus, and a student who actually brandishes a knife on campus. The administration, you know, may elect not to bring that first student forward for expulsion given the circumstances and the fact that, you know, he or she may have no record of having committed any other kinds of offenses have been problematic in any way. So I would like to see the schools continue to have some latitude and discretion there, where obviously if a child brandishes a knife, we want to see them in an expulsion hearing.
Dr. Valentine, you've been waiting patiently.
Huh? Now, and students forward for expulsion, and actually the board chose to expel only three of those. So I think there is very much of a student-centered kind of approach, both at the administrative level and at the board level for expulsions. The concern... Yeah, and you know, those numbers vary. A single incident could up that number by 50% pretty easily, but... without going into any specifics from cases in closed session, the generality that I was carrying out of that was not so much a concern over who was brought forward, but rather a concern for who was not brought forward in a particular case. And the board needs to know that in looking at those numbers of 9 expulsions coming forward and the board choosing to expel actually 3 of them, that administration is really looking for a way not to expel students. That is, you know, if student safety is an issue, obviously there won't be any hesitation to go forward. But the general bias is if there's some other way to approach an incident and some way to look at this in the student's favor, the administration is going to do that. I think it's going to be difficult from the board standpoint to evaluate events that don't come forward. It's going to be more difficult to evaluate those than events that do, because frankly there's a lot of information that just isn't shared because the student isn't brought forward for expulsion that probably played a part in that. I just want to reassure the public that we really do believe we're maintaining safe schools and that we really are pretty pretty student-centered when we approach the issue of student discipline.
Good. Thank you. And I just wanted to make sure that the one thing that I felt was going to be helpful was that checklist of available interventions and which ones were actually utilized. And I would just say, if this makes sense for everybody, that it not only would be the interventions available for that expellable event, but also what was provided earlier when a chain of events were leading to or an acceleration of activity. Thanks.
All right. Do you feel like you have direction, Dr. Mitakiewicz? Okay.
I sincerely appreciate it, but I would like to make just one comment. You know, these cases are very difficult for staff, and we appreciate the fact that you'd like to know the outcome of these students and what has happened as a result of their expulsion, take into consideration if there are any other parameters that you want to set upon the student's return, because really our goal is that this has been a learning experience for the student and they're ready to come back to school and fully integrate themselves into our school and into our activities program. So I'd just like to have you consider that as well.
All right, let's move on to the action consent agenda. Item number 7, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. Pull. Number 8, acceptance of donations. Number 9, disposition of surplus property. 10, approval of furniture and equipment requests. And 11, approval of purchase orders. Is there any discussion on these items? No. Could someone make a motion, please?
I move the approval of 8, 9, 10 and 11 on the action consent agenda.
Okay. It's been moved by Mr. Buckman, seconded by Mrs. Roger. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Item number 7. Go ahead, Adrian.
This is a real quick question for Mr. Robinette. I know that we try to hire people on a probationary status, but we have 3 new people on temporary. And ROP is always temporary because we don't know if we're going to get ROP funds. But math and elementary, those must be like people on leave or what's
yeah,
that?
Yeah, the math position is against a teacher on a leave of absence, and the elementary teacher is against an individual who is working at 2 sites and needs a backup for reading recovery teaching.
Oh, thanks. And one more. Is it common in October to have like 3 special ed paraeducators and 2 bus drivers? I mean, school like started in the middle of August. 2 months later, the paraeducators are quitting. It's like, I know it's a hard job. Is that why?
You're correct. It's unusual to have resignations at this point.
Yeah, that's
in
kind
the
of
year.
Unusual. And 2 bus drivers and 3 paraeducators. Okay.
And before you go on, I just want to say that Julie Mamo Beckius, is that how you pronounce her last
correct.
Name? Julie Mamo is. We're approving her to be a dean at San Luis High, and I would just point out that she was a special ed teacher at San Luis High, and she's got a great reputation as a teacher, and it's really exciting. I think at expulsions now we will get some special ed expertise there as well. So welcome, Julie. Do you want to make a motion on that?
I move that we approve the approval of certificate.
Dr. Valentine, were you ahead of me?
No, I was listening to the fact that I do have an advanced agenda item.
Oh,
but
you do?
I wasn't trying to get ahead of you. And go ahead.
Ladies first.
I'll
anyway.
Defer to you as always,
no,
if necessary.
Absolutely not.
I would like to suggest that we put on the advanced agenda discussion of having a scheduling a board retreat for the purpose of discussing board procedural items.
Okay. So we have 2 people to support that, a board retreat to discuss board procedural items. Okay. So,
is there a recommended timeline?
I think probably after the first of the year is what I'm guessing, after we have the new board member come on, or December. What's your feeling on that? I think we need to get our new board member on and after CSBA, because we'll get the new board member on about about November 20th. We'll go to CSBA that following week. We cannot do that. We cannot do it there because we can't have a board meeting outside of our jurisdiction. So
may we have a sidebar?
Right now? Yeah, sure.
Can you?
I don't think there's such a thing as a sidebar. I don't think that exists.
No. We lobby at CSBA prior to. Okay, if there is a date prior to CSBA, I think that would be preferable to me.
The suggestion would be that perhaps before the meeting when we interview new board members, that we have our board.
I thought, Walt, you were getting back that morning.
Okay, that's good. That's probably good.
We offered you three dates, but you're certainly welcome to schedule this meeting whenever you like. But of those three, the Wednesday option was ruled out for two of you not being available. And the Wednesday the 14th was ruled out. The other two options given were Tuesday the 13th and Monday the 19th. And the 13th was the preferred option, although everyone is available both dates. And if you want to throw out another date, that's certainly your prerogative.
Was it right before a holiday or something?
Tuesday immediately follows the Veterans Day holiday. I only tossed out three dates, and you responded immediately, why didn't we look at this Thursday? And you can certainly look at that if you like. I just stopped when we had three to consider.
I responded about looking at Thursday?
Yeah.
No, I believe I said that Wednesday night was difficult for me, but that right. I would accommodate the best date.
But somebody else also was not available Wednesday. So.
The only problem being tonight, I can't check my calendar here, so I can't answer if Thursday works for me.
Thursday the 15th is not good? Okay, so the only other problem with the 13th is that it's the day that Mr. Millar returns.
Well, yeah, I think I get in the night of the 12th, so I should be able to. I'll be there. I'll be grouchy, but I'll be there.
You won't be grouchy.
the reason so the we bring up that date is that we have a meeting early in November. I'm not sure what the November 6th.
Yeah.
We have a meeting November 13th. We have a meeting November 20th, and we have Thanksgiving, and then we have CSBA. Am I hearing meetings on some date other than that? And we're also finding how difficult it is to schedule any meeting date in that time frame, because we've sort of tried to find a date for the interviews.
The 13th for the interviews and the 13th for a retreat prior to the interviews?
Sorry?
The 13th for the interviews and the 13th for a retreat prior to the interviews.
Well, do we have any idea how many applicants we have yet?
Yeah, the more people, the better. Let's go with the 13th if we could and try to schedule the retreat for the 13th. And if that doesn't work, could we try to schedule the retreat for the 20th prior to the meeting of the 20th? You won't be here. Okay. I don't have my calendar here, Kim, so I don't know why I said I couldn't be here till 6 o'clock on the 13th. But you know what, Kim? You know what it was, Kim? I think it was the 14th. I couldn't be here before. Hey, Kim? I think it was it might have been the 14th, because I think I have a staff meeting on the 14th. So let's just go for the 13th and And I'll take my chances.
I want to toss one other thing out. I thought that I heard you say when we first began the discussion about the retreat that you wanted to consider doing it while you were at CSBA.
We cannot
and
do that.
Yes, you can. You may hold a meeting outside the boundaries of the district in limited circumstances, and a retreat is usually that kind of a thing. So if that's a time frame that appeals to you, we can look into that. The board has many years ago held retreats out of district.
Can't do it Friday night, though. You know that. The Donald Smith reception.
I would just say it would be tough for me to break away during CSBA because I've got a bunch of obligations during CSBA as part of the being on the program committee. So I
think you have to have some electronic vehicle for public access.
We'd have to notice the meeting and we'd have to have it in a public place and things like that.
I think this is too cumbersome. Let's just roll it into
January.
Well,
you know, I was going to say, what about this on the 13th?
Yeah.
On the 13th, why don't we do the retreat at 5:30 with a little bit of dinner somewhere? Because I think we're coming here.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
For the meeting, for the interviews, because it's a coast issue.
Mm-hmm.
And if we start this meeting at 7?
An hour and a half.
I think it'll be...
What day is it?
The 13th. Start at 5:30 with dinner and our retreat, and then come here at 7?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Work?
Yeah. Is that workable? Solicitor or staff or both? It's going to be an open meeting. So
it's going to be an open. The retreat
has to
be.
The retreat has to be an open meeting. That's correct.
Well, I'm not really sure I have a good idea what we're going to be talking about, so I don't really have a preference about it.
Okay, Mark, what do you think?
Would it be possible for CSBA, the regional rep, or somebody from CSBA to be here?
We can check.
Might be somebody near. Because we're talking about board procedure and board protocol, and that's really what they do.
Yeah, and if that individual weren't available, would you want to proceed with the retreat? In other words, is the date the variable or is the facilitator the variable? Perhaps the constant is what I'm looking for.
Right. Sure.
Are we going to have some input, like people doing a little research and things like that? I think that would be good. I'm suggesting that we do, individually or whatever, look into, you know, policies and things that we're concerned about and bring them so that we're not just talking about things from where we stand without new information at least.
I'm going to make a suggestion.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Please.
It's late and it could be fuzzy. Could we talk to former board members that may be in the area that would be willing to? And I'm thinking of Glenn in particular.
To facilitate the meeting?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure Glenn has the.
Yeah. I don't think Glenn has the. Well, Andy's a school district employee. I wouldn't put Andy into.
Okay. I'm turning my mic off for the night now.
Could I, you know what, my sense is if the board would approve it, that why don't we go ahead and see if we can find somebody from CSBA to come and help facilitate the meeting. If not, then let's see if Wendy would be available, or Don Maruska, perhaps. Okay.
And again, just if we strike out on all of them, which may or may not happen. Yeah. Do you still want to have the retreat?
Let's go forward if we can't find anybody.
Okay. Is everybody okay with that? Okay. All right.
Yeah, is that the will of the board?
Yes. Okay. Move on to item number 14, reports by board members and administrators. Mr. Miller.
Respond. So after the break, Coach Greer came up and spoke to me about the comments I'd made about the primary focus in 9th and 10th grade PE being on physical activity as opposed to healthy living or other parts of the curriculum. He acknowledged that that was the case, but felt it should be stated for the record that the PE standards are new, which they are, and they're just beginning to develop those standards further and focus on the most essential ones. And I really wanted to make the point. He indicated that he's been through an in-service training. I think he has another one next week. The staff is working together, and I think it's important to make the point that they are focusing on further developing those standards. And he believes that over time, there will be a lot more of that healthy living type of education as part of the PE curriculum. And I think it's important that be in the record.
And Mr. Coach Crivello also reiterated that as well. Okay. Mrs. Roger.
Move to adjourn.
Thank you.